From the land of Grand Theft University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fourth day of April, 2017. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Todd Hubbs will be here to recap what he thought of last week's USDA acreage and grain stocks report, and more importantly, tally them into some brand new numbers from the U of I. Looking forward into the supply and demand figures for the coming season. And then, as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the agricultural energy markets with Harry Cooney from Growmark and update the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. It is the fourth day of April. Normally, we talk with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. He's out of the office this afternoon. Stablemate there, John Hester, is with us, and he'll take us through what happened in Chicago. John, thanks for filling in. It looks like it was a little bit of a turnaround Tuesday.
Yeah, I think so. I think in the corn mainly it was the fact that there was some profit-taking and short coverings probably about run its course, and the traders were taking profit on the corn that they'd bought and had pretty good money made in, and there was no export sales today. So that meant no fresh news. There's conflicting weather reports out of South America. Some say it's going to dry out down there, and some of the forecasters are saying it's going to stay wet. There's more bird flu in China with 6 to 10 more humans contracting the disease. FC Stone raised their Brazil bean estimate to 111.6 million metric tons from 108 million metric tons. The wheat was probably up a little bit today on the anticipation of this cold snap that's coming through out there, but I don't think it's going to get cold enough to do any great damage. And I think the markets here for us, the next big thing is going to be our weather. Well, we have delayed plantings, which, you know, it's nice to get them planted early, but, you know, the weather is more important in June and July than the planting date is sometimes. So I think the weather stays nice. The beans are going to have another downside move to them, where the corn may hold its own or rally just a little bit because of the acreage.
Do you have a downside target for the soybeans?
Oh, I think they could go sub-9 if, you know, everything would work right. I mean, Brazil's going to have a great crop, and, and I think it all depends on how many acres we plant. You know, they're talking, 2 to 3 million more right now, and if we have delayed plantings, that acreage number will probably go higher. And if we get over 90 million acres of soybeans, then, you know, it's going to put a lot of pressure on the bean market.
Indeed it is. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today and for filling in. I sure do appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That is John Hester. He is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, there will be no ag budget slashing this fiscal year. At least that's what Senator John Hoeven, the new chair of the Upper Chamber's Ag Appropriations Panel, says. The senator has a pretty clear take on the White House's recent proposal to cut $18 billion from discretionary spending in FY 2017, including more than $1 billion for USDA. The North Dakota Republican says we're too far along to make that adjustment now. Lawmakers are already trying to figure out how to pay for the additional military spending and attempting to hash out a way to finance a wall, too, all within the Department of Homeland Security's budget. A host of agricultural trade groups are holding fly-ins this week, including the American Seed Trade Association, or ASTA, which expects to have 70 of its members meeting lawmakers on the Hill tomorrow. They'll be pushing for stronger intellectual property rights and trade deals, better coordination by FDA, USDA, and EPA in relation to plant breeding policies, increased funding for USDA Agriculture Research Service's National Plant Germplasm System and Germplasm Enhancement of Maize Program, and more cooperation with the Department of Interior's Bureau of Land Management in helping to recover from recent wildfires. Speaking of which, the U.S. Department of Agriculture today authorized emergency grazing on Conservation Reserve Program, or CRP, lands located in Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, the three states which were most heavily impacted by ongoing wildfires, which began on the 6th day of March. USDA Acting Deputy Secretary Michael Young issued a memorandum authorizing the emergency grazing of cattle by ranchers who are facing the ruination of their herds due to the lack of sufficient grazing land. Ranchers and farmers are only now able to begin to estimate losses since the fires are still burning in some places, and access to the lands to survey the damage has been limited. Damages in the states are expected to grow, but are now estimated as follows. In Kansas, 630,000 acres burned, primarily pasture lands, between 3,000 and 9,000 head of cattle lost. Large volumes of hay and feed destroyed, and an estimated cost of fencing destroyed exceeding some $36 million. 390,000 Oklahoma acres were burned. They lost 3,000 head of cattle, have an estimated cost of structure lost of about $2 million, and fencing lost at $22 million and climbing. In Texas, there's an estimated 550,000 acres that have burned, 3,000 cattle lost, 1,900 pigs, 1,000 miles of fencing are expected to be a total loss, but so far Texas has been unable to survey those areas. And finally today, farm ties are the in thing. Turns out Sonny Perdue isn't the only Georgia Aggie with a great farm-themed neckwear collection. Georgia Agriculture Secretary Gary Black wore a peanut tie on Monday when he gave remarks to the local Foods Impact Conference at George Washington University. The peanut tie, along with many in Perdue's collection, came from Southern Proper, an Atlanta-based clothing company, potentially explaining why the Georgia contingent is so on top of the farm tie look. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. Todd, thanks for being with us. Last week, USDA released their prospective plantings and their grain stocks report. Both came out on Friday, the 31st day of March. These generally set the tone for the next quarter, April, May, June, in the marketplace, unless there's really something strange that happens in the planting season for the United States, or I suppose, as was the case last year, that there might be a problem with the corn second crop in Brazil. What the numbers tell us on Friday of last week?
There's going to be a lot of acres of beans, and it looks like most of it's replacing feed grains.
So you and Daryl Good and Scott Irwin put together a webinar that folks can link to off our willag.org website, off the Farm Doc Daily website, and watch. It's posted there now. They can rewatch it anytime they'd like. You came up with some balance sheets. The numbers, I think, that are important are your ending stocks figures for both corn and soybeans. And let's stick with soybeans for the moment. Average farm price for USDA in March off their WASD was $9.60. You maintained that for your expectations for the updated WASD due out not very long from now in the month of April at $9.60. And you look forward to next year, your number's quite a little bit lower.
It is. We came in at $8.95, and we stuck with the numbers in soybeans for the old crop 16-17 marketing year because the consumption numbers look reasonable. USDA lowered soybean exports for the marketing year recently, and we've seen a strong crush number as we move through the year. So that amount of consumption looks reasonable, and that 960 is for old crop. We feel like that's there. Again, remember, that's a season average price, so we're talking about over the whole course of the marketing year. moving forward into 17-18 marketing year, we've got a huge amount of soybeans in Brazil to compete with us in the export market. We didn't lower exports all that much in our projection, but still it's not going to be the level it was this year. We kept a nice crush level, but when you take that 52.1 bushels of acre of yield last year and the huge amount of production we had, the large Brazilian crop, and then on top of that, 89.5 million acres of soybean planting intentions, there's a lot of soybeans. We only got so much crush capacity in the country, 1.95 billion bushels. It may go a little bit higher than that, but I can't see it blowing that out of the sky. And then we're in competition. Brazil's got a lot of soybeans. Who's going to consume it? Will China continue to increase their consumption of soybeans like they have over the last 10 years, year-over-year growth in soybean consumption? If so, that might provide some relief. But having said that, 89.5 million acres, even at a trend yield of 48.1, which is 4 bushels less than it was last year, leaves us with a lot of soybeans in the United States, which means ending stocks are going to go up, which puts downward pressure on price. So we'll see as it goes forward, but you know, there's going to be a lot of downward price pressure for soybeans moving through the rest of the year and into 17-18 marketing year.
So these are things farmers will consider as they move forward and look into the future. However, at hand today, most of them will have quite a bit of corn on hand. I suppose we know whether that's on or off farm, and you can tell me whether that's disturbing or not and how different it is. And they've got old and new crop to market.
They do. I think there's a lot of corn, old crop corn still out there. I'm not as pessimistic on corn as I am on soybeans. I haven't been for a while. We still got that second crop in Brazil to come through, and that's nowhere close to finished. We've seen really good ethanol grind. Our exports are looking good. The feed and residuals is the problem. The March 1st grain stocks report came in at 8.62 billion bushels, which when, by my calculation, when you start looking at it, even at 5.55, which is what the USDA WASDA report in March had feed and residual at, that looks a little high even yet. So that number might come down some more. I don't see ethanol grind slowing down too much, but that's more dependent on, you know, gas consumption, and we got a lower feedstock price, and we've been exporting ethanol. So that's still there. We're going to still get the grind. I think our export numbers are going to still be there. As I look forward, I see stable to higher prices for corn. So if you're still holding on to old crop corn, you know, look for your opportunities. You know, if you see these little runs, and is there upside to corn? There could be, right? But it's not near as drastic to me right now as what I'm seeing in the soybean market. Especially when you take the count, we dropped 4 million acres of planting intentions on corn. And then on top of all of that, when you dig into the planting intentions numbers, sorghum was down 933,000 acres over last year, and their planting intentions, oats were down, all the feed grains were down in planting intentions. I did a little back-of-the-envelope calculation. This is not even including wheat, and you can say how much winter wheat's used for feed. It's about 5.5 million acres of feed grains. That's not including wheat down in planting intentions in 2017, which puts a lot of emphasis on what's corn yield going to be this year when we're thinking about feed. So there's still some possibilities there for corn. I'm sort of still sticking with my stable to higher prices in 17-18 if these planting intentions come to bear. Currently, if you're talking about right now, I think we've sort of come out of the report era and we're sort of settling back. And I think we'll still stay in that same little pattern we've been in for quite a while, you know, ranging from 345 to 380, somewhere in that range for a while, unless we see some kind of information come in and planting. The WASDA report come out might be a little bit bearish if they do drop feed and residual like they think they're going to in this next report. There's some little bearish information there, but overall, long run, looking forward, I think there's some possibility for corn prices there.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Todd Hubbs is an agricultural economist specializing in commodity markets here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can always read more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website. There and on our website at willag.org, you'll find links to this week's webinar, Post the USDA Reports, with U of I Ag economist Todd Hubbs, Scott Irwin, and Daryl Good. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check now the energy markets, and we're joined by Harry Cooney. He's at GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois. Thanks, Harry, for being with us this afternoon. You know, the markets seem to want to rally just a little bit in the energies. What's been happening?
Well, good afternoon, Todd. That's right. The energy markets sold off quite a bit there in early March, found some bottoming type of action by mid-March, sat there for a couple weeks. Now I've tried to go back into a little bit of a rally phase. In fact, if you look at lead month crude oil futures, they dipped down probably, I think we got down to about $47 on the lowest point there a couple weeks ago. Now we're back over $50. In fact, today we closed right around $51. So coming back seasonally this time of year, what happens? Normally the energy markets do rally. They tend to hit a little soft spot there in the month of March, and that's just what we did this year. In fact, the soft spot was a little softer than normal even. But now we're back on a little rally mode that can take us for another month or two to even some higher prices. So we'll see if that occurs this year or not.
Are we nearing some monthly highs?
Well, that's interesting because in gasoline futures, we're almost at two-year highs. I've told some people two-month highs, but really it's almost back to two-year highs in some gasoline. Some of the demand numbers in gasoline have been a little softer than last year here for the past couple of months, but they're coming on strong. And I don't know if it's because of some early spring weather. Can't really say that for sure, but pumps still pretty reasonable. Maybe not as low as what they were a year or so ago, but still very reasonable for driving. And when you look at some of these holiday travel numbers from AAA, I would think that this summer could be a very strong driving season. Whether we hit record demand or not in gasoline, it could really be on the strong side, let's put it that way.
Will that drive prices even higher?
I think it'll drive price. I think pump prices probably have more to go on the upside. It's just how much. If you get another 30 to 50 cents on gasoline, that may be all you'd do. So, yeah, I think there's probably more to be had, but not a lot more. It's not in dollars, let's put it that way.
And what are your expectations for the whole of the year? Will this be a more miles-driven year than last? And this has to pertain, of course, to the amount of ethanol that can be blended into the gasoline supply.
Well, it just seems like you probably have more on the upside to be had here in the liquid, not as much on the ethanol, but on the liquid fuel price structure. But then you tend to hit some early peaks, and sometimes you can peak out for example, the gasoline price by early summer, even though you'd think it'd be more late summer when the driving season's really kicked in. Sometimes it actually peaks out a little early, so maybe you try to rally some more from now into early summer, but then you put a little peak in price.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate you being with us. We'll talk with you in another month.
We'll do it. Thank you, Todd.
Harry Cooney is with GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Don Day is here from Day Weather out in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, Don, we've gotten quite a little bit of rain, and it looks like it's going to continue to come, not only in our part of the world, but just kind of one wave after another across the United States. Can you tell me how things are moving along?
We really don't have anything different to talk about in terms of what we talked last week on how the spring pattern was unfolding. And now that we're in the new month of April, a lot of what we saw develop in late March is going to continue. There's going to be a pretty good march of storms west to east across the nation, and this will bring frequent opportunities for precipitation. It also is going to open the door to some, at times, colder weather. We don't expect the cold to stick, but one thing that we do see coming is a fair amount of chilly air behind these systems coming through. So this is going to put the skids on any real rapid warm-up into an early start to the warmer pattern. As we get later in the month and in early May, that may change, but it's going to be a busy pattern. classic textbook April, really coast to coast.
How cold and where?
Well, I think everyone is going to be able to share in the cold. There's going to be cold spells in the Northwest, the Rockies, the Northern Plains, and then the Midwest and Corn Belt. I do see opportunities for temperatures still to be dropping below freezing. This will be something that we'll probably see later this week behind one of these waves coming on through. Do I see severe or record-breaking cold? I don't. I just see a pattern to where it'll test everybody's patience in terms of consistently staying warm. We're just not there yet. We're still going to have a lot of up and down.
Is this just a short-term effect, and how quickly will we get back to warmer evening temperatures?
Well, we're going to have to wait till probably early May before that gets going. The silver lining, though, is this is a moist weather pattern, and recently we've seen really badly needed precipitation across portions of Oklahoma, Kansas, portions of Colorado, Nebraska, the panhandles, Missouri, and those areas are going to continue to benefit from these systems moving through, and this will alleviate some moderate drought conditions in some of those areas that have developed this winter.
Let me take up those lower temperatures one more time. I was thinking that we were looking at what most were expecting would be a wet and warm April. Is that beginning to change?
I think the wet certainly is going to stick. I'm not so sure about it being warmer than normal. The thing is we have a lot of up and downs. And the ups will certainly put a lot of pluses on the positive side of average, but the minuses will even that out. So I think when it's all said and done, we'll be close to average with temperatures.
Hey, thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.